All right, hi everybody. Thank you all for coming. Once again, Rabbi Wiederser graciously agreed to give us some of his Torah. Next week is Rabbi Ezra Wiener, with an N, and in 2 weeks, Rabbi Tilly Hartstock. And then we'll take it from there. Thank you very much.
When I was probably 15 in high school, learning on my own, sort of for the first time, I got into yeshiva like, you know, most of my contemporaries. So I started learning Chumash on my own, relearning Chumash on my own. And I got the Parshas Vayishlach, and I read the story about Reuven, and I felt that I had been duped. Probably when I learned Vayishlach in Yeshiva Spring Valley, which was probably like third grade, I wouldn't have understood anyway what was being there. But we had been taught the very well-known medrash about Reuven and what he did in this particular story. And it was only then I sort of realized, one second, that's actually not what the text says. I don't really remember beyond that from my reaction at the time. But over time, I've come to appreciate a little bit more about this particular issue. And I wanted to explore a little bit. For starters, there is a popular notion that this is the standard view, and I should say it's the only view. And that may not be correct, number one. And number two, it's interesting also to see how the Rishonim treat this particular issue, how the Parshanim treat it, because there are a number of very different approaches on this, on how to understand Pshat, and even one very interesting approach as to how to understand, I don't want to say the Medrash, but what exactly Reuven did. So just to first read the story itself. So this is right, this really comes right after Rachel's death. And then it says, Vayisa Yisrael, Vayet Ohalo, Mehala Lemigdal Eder. So Yaakov Avinu travels, and Vayet Ohalo, normally as it means throughout Bereishis, is that he pitched his tent. He pitched his tent, Mehala Lemigdal Eder, sort of beyond Migdal Eder. Interestingly enough, a place, if I'm not mistaken, that is only occurs one other place in Tanakh. I think it's in Treyas or somewhere, and it's supposed to be about the advent of the Messiah. And there is some Midrashic comment about this. But it's interesting, it says, Vayet Ohalo. And the Medrash may pick up on this. Then we have the next Pasuk, and I have presented the Pasuk in two different ways. Many of you are familiar with the fact that in the Aseres HaDibros, there are two sets of trap. There's a lot that's been written about this, about the precise details. There are a couple of different traditions within our Chumashim, exactly how it works out. But in the Aseres HaDibros, you have what's called the Tama Elyon and the Tama Tachton. The original trap is almost certainly the Tama Tachton. It breaks it down according to Psukim, the way Psukim are normally broken down. And then you have the Tama Elyon, which takes each of the Dibros and makes them into one Pasuk, which in the case of two of them makes a very, very long pasuk. The first, Lo Yieh Lecha, and Shabbos. And in the case of a few, the Dibros takes what would have been one regular pasuk and breaks it up into four Dibros. So you have it both in Yisro, you have it for Eschanan. There's only one other place that I am aware of in the Torah. In fact, I'm fairly certain it's the only place in the Torah, and I don't think anywhere in Tanakh, that you have a Tama Elyon or Tama Tachton in something else. And that is in this particular pasuk. So if you look at the two readings, the Tam HaTachton is first. Vayihi Bishgon Yisrael Baratzahi. When Yaakov was living in that area, Vayelech Reuven, Reuven goes, Vayishkav es Bilha Pilegesh Aviv. And he does something with Bilha, his father's concubine. It's interesting that she's described as a concubine here. Vayishma Yisrael. And Yaakov heard about it. What was his reaction? Nothing. It's the end of the parsha. There's a little parsha psucha here. The next parsha begins. Vayiyu v'nei Yaakov shnei masar. And then if you go skip down to pasuk chaf gimel for a moment, b'nei Leah b'char Yaakov Reuven v'shimon v'levi v'dov yisachar zvulun. Then b'nei Rachel eshes Yaakov Yosef v'yamin. And then uvnei Zilpah uvnei Bilha shivchas Rachel. Yosef v'Yamin, and then Uvnei Zilpa Shivchas Leah God v'Yasher. They're described interestingly as Shivcha to the wives, not described as Pilegesh Yaakov. So basically, there are two stories. The one very odd thing is Vayishma Yisrael. It's odd, not because that Yaakov should have heard about it, but it's odd because we don't see what Yaakov's reaction is. And if you read with the Tamat Achton, there's no reaction. It's kind of like a story that falls off a cliff, right? You know, you're expecting the explosion, you expect something, nothing. Move on. Yaakov had 12 children. Rachel had just died. She wasn't giving birth to any more. We'll talk about Bilhah, probably wasn't going to give birth anymore either, and not after this incident. And then moves on. Yaakov returns home. Yitzchak dies. Esav's genealogies. That's how it goes. However, in the Tam HaElyon, so the Bali Masorah here do something interesting. Number one, they run a stop sign. Actually, they join two psukim. And number one, and number two, they actually run a stop sign because they run over a parsha break. Now, this would not be the only place in the Torah where there is a parsha, the emsa pasuk, where in effect the Bali Masorah have you read, you know, running over the parsha psucha or stuma. There are at least a couple of others. There's one in Parshas Devarim. There's one in Parshas Pinchas. I don't remember if there are any others. And they call this like Pasuk Be'emza Pasuk or something like that. Here the Bali Masorah do this. So what they do is they take the very same verse, and you can see how the trap has to be changed ever so slightly, so that Vayishma Yisrael is an Esnafta. And then the end of the Pasuk is Vayu V'nayakov Shnei Masar. You can see, by the way, not that this proves anything, but in the enumeration of the Bar Ilan, at least, and I suspect the most Chumashim, they actually only count Pasuk HaFez as one Pasuk, because the next Pasuk is Pasuk HaGimel. So the question is, why did the Bali Masorah do this? In the Aseres HaDibros, it's very clear that the Tama Atachton is the original. It's not quite as clear here, but it's likely to be the original, given that you have a parsha break in the middle. So why is it that the Bali Masorah joined these two? So we'll come back to that. First we get to the Gemara on Shabbos, the very famous Gemara. Yes?
The parsha breaks in both versions, right?
That's just because the Bar Ilan prints it that way, yes. I mean, the answer is there is a parsha break in the Torah, period. Right, that's a fact.
Parsha break means a space.
A space, yes.
So
the question is, though, how do you put the trap on it, is the question.
Meaning Yisrael is an Esnachto or...
Correct, as opposed to Sel Pasuk. The first one is a Sel Pasuk, it's the end. The Esnachta is on Aviv. Vayishkav Espelot Pilar Shaviv, Vayishma Yisrael. Whereas in the second one, the Esnachta has moved down, and then the end of the Pasuk comes, there's only one Pasuk. Yeah. Well, that has to be done by definition in order. The point in the first version, you have Vayelech Reuven, because Vayishkav is going to be the last thing before the Esnachta unit, known as the Tipcha Munach Esnachta, and therefore Vayelech. This is a mistake by mistaken here. I mean, it's based upon Ksav Leningrad. In most of the Chumashim, Vayelech Reuven in the second pasuk is a Revi, which you could not have put. You could not have put it in the first version. Vayelech Reuven could not have a Revi. It wouldn't work in terms of the way the trap is always laid out. But the point is that because you need to get the Esnachta and Pilega Shaviv, Espila Pilega Shaviv is going to be that unit, and Vayishkav has to have a different trap. Vayishkav, Big Kama, Espila Pilega Shaviv. In the second pasuk, you have to extend it, so instead of putting a what's called a Melech on Vayishkav, Zakef Gadol is a melech. It's a major pause, one level below the Esnachta. Instead, you extend it out to be Lega Shavim, and you make the Esnachta new by Yishma Yisrael. So, we now turn our attention to the Gemara and Shabbos. I occasionally, jokingly, would refer to Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani and Rabbi Yonasan as Rabbi Ortskol. Because Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani and Rabbi Yonasan here, in the Gemara and Shabbos, over the course of a blot and a half, is going to take six biblical figures and exonerate them in one way or another for their sins. Although, interestingly enough, three of those characters, as Rashi carefully notes, are not exonerated for their sin, for their entire sin, but rather only for a piece of the sin, which was the part that was Arayos. To Reuven, the only sin there was probably the Arayos, although he is sinning, it's just not Arayos. They say that about David, he says it about David and Bathsheba, which doesn't surprise us. In other words, yes, he did something wrong, but it wasn't Gilearius because Bathsheba wasn't married, because once Uriah was killed, so the get that he had given, you know, already was retroactively took place. David might have been guilty for having Uriah killed, but he wasn't guilty for Gilearius. And strangely enough, B'nai Eli. He says the second example, the second maimer that he has after Reuven is Kala Omer B'nai Eli Chatu Eina Elatoa, which is the one that's oddest, because you have David, you have Shlomo, you have Reuven, you have Yoshio HaMelech, and you have B'nai Shmuel. So certainly the first four figures, one of them is one of the Shvatim, three of them were known the best kings of Judea. Okay, Shmuel's children, you know, it says in the Navi they took bribes. Unlike, they didn't follow Shmuel's path. But B'nai Eli, they were scoundrels, they were villains. The Navi describes them as B'nai Belial. But that's not a typical term. Right? Shmuel's children didn't go in lo chubidracha, vayitu acharei habatza. But B'nai Eli were absolute scoundrels. And all what Shmuel and Nachmani Amirosan exonerates them from was asher yishkivunas hanashim hatzova os pesach omoe. Not that they were mevazei kachim, but they weren't actually megalei raayos. They just, what did they do? They delayed bringing the women's karbanos so they couldn't go back to their husbands yet, and therefore it's mala lavakas of kilu shchavan, which is the same thing he does in a sense with Reuven. So Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Yonos is the one who, he's the same person throughout, who basically exonerates these biblical figures. Again, four of which are obvious, for the fifth I can understand, the sixth I can't wrap my mind around. But he says the following, Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Yonos, Kala Omer Reuven Kata Ein Alotoa, Shenemar, Vayuvene Yaakov Shenem Asar, Melamed Shekulam Shekulam Ka'achas. Now, what he says here is probably the reason why the Bali Masorah joined the two psukim. In other words, what he's suggesting is that Reuven did what he did, Vayishma Yisrael, and nonetheless, Vayiyu v'nei Yaakov Shnei Masar. And interestingly enough, although it's not really true, the next pasuk is B'nei Leah Eshes Yaakov, B'nei Leah, Bechor Yaakov Reuven. He's still called the Bechor. Right? But certainly he's listed amongst the 12 Shvatim. So even though he did what he did, whatever he did, nonetheless, he's still included. So Rav Shmuel Nachmani Arionasan says, how is it possible that he's counted, now that they're all Shkulim? You know, Bila was Megala Arayas, and not Megala Arayas. Possibly it was Ashes Ish, it was Ashes Av, and nonetheless, he's one of the Shvatim. Ella, Mani Mekayim Vayishkaves Pilapi Legash Aviv, Melamed Shebilbo Matzao Shel Aviv. He messed around with the bed of his father, Umala Lavakos of Ki'ilu Shachav Ima. And therefore, the Torah writes, it's as if he had slept with his father's Pilegash. Now, Rosh Shmuel Nachmani doesn't explain why that is. Why did Reuven do this? He explains why Reuven could not possibly have done what it says literally. But why? What is he motivated by? So that becomes apparent in the second member. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Mutzal oso tzaddik me oso avon. That tzaddik was saved from that sin. Veloma ba masas eliyada. That such a thing never happened. Efshar osid zaro lamor al har eva velomar arur shochev meishes aviv. V'yavo chayt zeliyada. It's an interesting kind of proof. If Reuven was once one of the tribes. I think it was standing on Har Evel. I mean, the mountain that got the curses, whatever that means. And they said, Arur Shochev Emeshes Aviv. How could that possibly be? Elamani Mekayim Vayishkaves Bela Pilegesh Aviv. Elbon Imo Tava. He stood up for the honor, for the dishonor of his mother. Omar Imachos Imi Hoyset Tzara Le'imi. If my mother's sister was a rival and had to take my father's attention away from my mother. Shifchas achos imi tietzar leimi. But the shifcha of my mother's sister is going to do that also. Aman ubilbel es matzah. He went and he rearranged the beds. Okay. So the Gemara. So that's the reason why, apparently, and I would suggest. And we'll see the way Rashi's formulation that it's probably thinking about the previous pasuk by Yet Aholo. It has to do something about how Yaakov pitched his tent. And Rashi, we'll see later, says that Yaakov basically put his bed, you know, in Bilhah's tent after Rachel died. Okay. So now the Gemara continues down to the next line. Kitanoi. This issue is actually Machlokas HaTanoi. Pachas Kamayim Al Tosar. That's the pasuk in Birchas Yaakov to his children. For Reuven, it wasn't exactly a bracha. It was rather a musar shmuz. So that pasuk, Pachas Kamayim Al Tosar. You were hasty, like water flowing, and therefore you will not have more. Each of the Tanoim darshins Pachas as an otrikon, as an abbreviation. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Pazta, Chavta, and Zalta. Pazta probably means you were hasty, you were Chavta means you sinned, and Zalta means you were lowered. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Pasata Aldas, you trampled on law, custom, religion. Chatasa, you sinned. Zanisa, you committed an act of sexual immorality. Rabban Gamliel Omer, Pilalta, you davened. Chalta, you trembled. Zarcha tfilascha, your prayer shined. Amar Rabban Gamliel, after saying that, Adayin Srichin Anu Lamodai. We still need the Modai. Rav Lazar Modai was known as a Balagada. I don't know if you'll find any halacha. I don't want to say none, but I bet you don't find a single halacha in the Mishnah quoted in the name of Rabbi Lazar HaModai. There were some Tanoim and Amoraim who were known for their halacha, some were known for their agada. In one particular case, I forget, somebody said to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, "No malach etzel agada. What are you doing with agada? This is not your field. You don't know what you're doing." So Rabbi Lazar HaModai was noted as a bal agada. So Adayim Tzricha on the Modai. Rabbi Lazar HaModai Omer, Hafochas Ateva Vidarsha. Invert it. Darshan et Zayin Ches Pei. Doesn't explain why. I suspect it's because the, in effect, what we're doing to the pasuk is interpreting, almost turning it over. Ziazata, you tremble. Hirtata, which means something similar. Parcha Chet Mimcha, and sin flew away from you. The use of the Hirtata as a Ches may not be surprising. In Eretz Yisrael, the gutturals were very weak. And the Hay and Ches, the Yushalmi as an expression, the seventh parak of Shabbos, Lo Mismanin Rabbanan Melakaryan Hay and Ches and the Ches and Hay. The Rabbanan did not refrain from interpreting or reading Ches as a Hay as a Ches. The Yushalmi says it there, and the Bavli has a drasha. How do you know Lamites Malachos? Eileha Dvarim Asher Tzivashem Es Moshe, whatever the pasuk beginning of Vayakhel. So Eile in Gematria, the Bavli says, is 36. Dvarim is two more, and Hadvarim is one more, that's 39. But the Yushalmi Darshan's Eile, the Gematria is 39. Aleph Lamed Ches, because the Rabbanan happily interchange Hein Ches. It's because the gutturals in Eretz Yisrael were very, very weak. They barely sounded different, and so they're willing to Darshan one way or the other, and this is an example of it, where he has it as Zion Hei Pei. Okay. Rashi writes on Ziyazata, Yoresa Lachato, you were afraid of sinning. And now Rashi explains, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yeshua Chata, Ulram Gamliel, Ulavalam Odoi, Bike Shalachto Velo Chata. So in other words, Rashi says, and that's very clear in the Gemara, according to Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua, Reuven did exactly what it says he did. I comment often when I quote this that when one considers from a halachic perspective or the perspective of prominent figures, Rabbi Yeshua was one of the most prominent Tanaim. And certainly in his generation, he is probably, you know, the Rosh HaMedabrim, if we can use that term. And Rabbi Eliezer was not exactly a minor figure either. Both of them assume they read the pasuk literally. So in Chazal, actually, despite the popular conception of this, in Chazal it's actually a machlokas hatanaim, whether or not to treat that pasuk literally. I should note that there's a tradition that the Mishnah has in Megillah. Gemara doesn't quote it here, but the Mishnah Megillah, I think it's in the third perek in the Mishnayos, but the third perek in the Bavli, but the fourth perek in the Mishnayos. They're reversed. It should have been really the last perek of the Masechta. So there are certain things that we don't read in Shul, and there are certain things that we read, but we're not mitargim. If I'm not mistaken, the Mishnah says that Masa Reuven Nikra v'lo mitargim. It can be read, but you don't translate it. Which would suggest, and I think if you check the Targum, that's the way it's here. If the Targum here translates literally, and if you were to read that publicly, it would be, you know, pasnish somehow. I don't know if it's the Kavar Bruvain's Kavar or certain kinds of things you just didn't say in public. But whatever it is, The Mishnah certainly recognizes the sensitivity of that particular issue, because the Targum certainly that they use translate, and our Targum translate it literally, and therefore certainly that the tradition perhaps that Reuven did what it says he did is a very old tradition. It might even be assumed in the Mishnah. Okay. Now, the issue of Reuven does come up a couple of other places in Tanakh. The first one is in Parshas Vayechi. In fact, both of the Musar, Sichas Musar that Yaakov gave on his deathbed, went because of incidents that happened in this Parsha. Shimon and Levi in Masa Adina and Shechem, and Reuven, which comes a little bit later with the Masa with Bilhah. So there, the Torah says the following. Reuven Bechoriata Kochiv Reish Yisoni. Yaakov says that Reuven, you are my Bechor. You are the strength and the first of my might. Yeser se'es, the yeser us. This is not an easy thing to translate. The way the Targumim translate yeser se'es, yeser us, is that you were worthy to have greater se'es and greater us. And what was Reuven Roy to have? Three things. Malchus, Kahuna, and Bechora. The Malchus and Kahuna are obvious what they are, and Bechora means the double portion. Pachas kamayim, but because you acted hastily, like water flowing, al tosar. You won't have yes, sir. You won't have those things. Ki alisa mishkevei avicha. You went up on your father's bed. Oz chilalto yitzui Allah. And then you profaned, probably, yitzui Allah means the bed that I went up on. So Yaakov is very clearly angry at Reuven that on his deathbed he doesn't give him a bracha. Instead he critiques him. But it's not spelled out exactly what happened here. But there is a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim that spells it out quite clearly. Uvnei Reuven Bechor Yisrael, ki hu ha-bechor, ubechalalo yitzu'ei aviv, nitna bechor asol lemnei Yosef ben Yisrael, velo lehisyaches la-bechora. I don't know what the last three words mean, but the way Ezra understands in Divrei Hayamim is that Yaakov took away the bechora, meaning the double portion, from Reuven, and he gave it to Yosef. How so? Because Yosef designated two shvatim. Yaakov designated two shvatim from Yosef, Ephraim Umnashe, Kiruvain Bishimon Yuli. So in fact, Yaakov did this, not disinherit Reuven, but he took away the chelak habechora. It is probably not surprising, and I don't want to talk about this now. It has been written about by a very distinguished scholar of law. I can't understand everything he writes, but the late Robert Cover, who was a very famous scholar of legal theory, who also had a traditional background, but he knew how to learn a bit, too, talks about the connection between the story, the narrative here, and the law in the Torah. Because when the Torah in Parshas Kisetze says, Kisiyena li'ish shnei nashim, v'achas ahuva v'achas snua, there is only one other time, place I'm aware in the Torah, and the Torah says you cannot disinherit the Bechor. There's only one place in the Torah I'm aware where the term snua and ahuva, snua certainly are used, and that's by Rachel and Leah. And it seems that the Torah here is banning what Yaakov Avinu did. It wouldn't be the only thing that Yaakov Avinu did that the Torah bans, marrying two sisters as well. But it's kind of interesting because it sounds like the story in Kisete is a little bit of a response in a certain way. And how you relate those two is an interesting discussion. But anyway, so according to Chazal, and they read the Pasuk Divrei Hayamim and Birchas Yaakov, Reuven's punishment was they lost the Bechor to Yosef, the Kahuna went to Levi, and the Malchus went to Yehuda. The truth be told, you can see throughout later in Bereishis, you'll see in Parshas Miketz in particular, you can see that Reuven did not have the respect of his brothers, or the respect of his father, and that Yehuda did. You can see at least two instances. Number one, when the brothers sell Yosef, Reuven did manage, sort of, he tried to save Yosef, but he wasn't the one who really, I mean, he gets credit for it on some level, but really the person who saved Yosef was Yehuda. Now, Yehuda was the one who said to his brothers, "Ma betza ki narogis achinu v'cheshin rastemo." Let's go sell him. So, the person responsible for saving Yosef's life was Yehuda, and the brothers didn't really listen to Reuven. You know, they temporarily threw him in the bar, but Yehuda was the one they listened to. And then, when it comes time to take Binyamin down to Mitzrayim, Reuven makes an offer to Yaakov, and Yaakov just responds by ignoring him, essentially. Lo yirid b'ni mochem. But Yehuda, when it comes time, Yehuda's the one who steps forward Lord and says to Yaakov, you know, I'll take responsibility, and finally Yaakov gives in. Which in itself may reflect the different judgment of Reuven and Yehuda. It may be that Yehuda asked Yaakov at a more, I don't say auspicious time, but later on when the food was running out, and that's why Yaakov gave in. But that in itself is an indication of Yehuda's wisdom, of knowing when to ask the question. Not only what he promised, but actually when to ask that question. Okay. Now, when you look at the Parshanim, so not surprisingly, we find a little bit of the same spread that you find in Chazal. In the Medrash Agada, which is probably a very, very late Medrash, I suspect fairly, probably, you know, I would guess, you know, around the turn of the first millennium or second millennium, should we call it, around the year 1000, in that neighborhood. It's not an early Medrash. So there we have, Vayishkav es bila pilegesh aviv. He writes, Chas v'shalom shenagaba, God forbid he even touched her, elek shemesa Rachel natal Yaakov mitaso, v'sam osa lefnei eres bilha. He put his bed by Bilhah's bed. Baru uvein mekinei le'imo. He came and he was mekane for his mother. Ubishvil shalosam mitasa lefnei lea. Imo bilbel mitasa. He rearranged things. Lafika chela kasav ki lushchava. Hado desiv vayishkav. So va'achal pikein, nonetheless, hishvel ha'kasav ha'mechad. The Torah equates him with his brother, shenemar, vayiyu v'nei ako shnei masar, melameit shekulam, shekulam ke'echad. And then he says, ukra'u b'char, he called them a b'char, he's called b'nei lea b'char Yaakov Reuven, shu b'char le'ibur, it was the first one, first pregnancy, b'char la'nachala, b'char la'voda, and b'char la'tshuva. Now the two middle ones are strange, because that's not true. Yaakov took away those. Unless you argue Yaakov only took away those on his deathbed, but in the story of Ayishlach, Reuven is still the Bechor Lenachala and still Bechor Lavoda. Be that as it may, I mean, the truth is, one of them Yaakov certainly didn't take away at this time. He didn't give Menashe and Ephraim weren't born yet, so he certainly didn't give that to Yosef yet. So anyway, but this position, the Medrash Agada, is sort of the position of Shmuel Nachbani Avram Yonason. Can anybody think of a reason why Reuven is going to be the one who's going to be, I don't want to say his mother's favorite, but the one who's going to be Tovea, his elbow, when Yaakov is showing favoritism towards the side of Rachel? So there's one story in last week's Parsha that might also be something that the Medrash is hanging its hat on, which is Vayhi b'mei kitzir chitim vayelech Reuven vayimtzadu da'im basadeh vayaveo sam elea imo. In fact, as I think about it now, that might be the only other place you have expression Vayelech Reuven in these two places. Right, so there he's going, what is he doing? He's bringing something to his mother, which Rachel then tries to get from Leah. And here, he's also doing something for his mother, even though it's Vayelech Reuven Vayishkav es bila pilegesh shavid. Okay, and Rashi, not surprisingly, quotes similarly, Mitosh, and turn the page over, Mitosha bilbo mishkavo ma'ala vakaso ki lushchava. So fine. Rashi notes that the Vayuvena Yaakov Shnei Masar, you skip the Netzi Bermaskel. The Pshat is Maskel Inyan Rishon. It's going back to what was in the previous parsha. Misha Nolad Binyamin, Nishlema Hamita. Once Binyamin was born, Yaakov's 12 sons were complete. And then the Torah interrupts with Rachel's death, which according to Rashi's first interpretation and earlier interpretation is what leads to Reuven doing what he does. And now the Torah returns to the Inyan, Umeata Ru'uyin Lehimanos. Now it's time to count the children. These are the 12 Shvatim that were done. The Rabboseinu Darshu Lelamdeinu Ba Shekulon Shavin V'kulam Tzadikim Shelo Chata Reuven. So Rashi then quotes that interpretation. Okay. So now, this and that is not surprising. But now, when we look at the Pashtunim, there are a few interesting things that come up. First, which doesn't really address this issue, but it is so I could not resist putting it here, because it does explain the odd expression Vayishma Yisrael, is the Rashbam. The Rashbam, Rashi actually does say this, but the Rashbam uses this all the time. The Rashbam has a technique that's called V'chom Hu Avi Chena'an. He must have at least six places in the commentary we have that's extant, where the Rashbam says, Kimo v'cham hu avi chanan. We happen not to possess the Rashbam on the pasuk of v'cham hu avi chanan, but we have Rashi there, and we can tell what Rashbam means. And what Rashbam means is the following. It says, "Vayuvnei Noach hayotzim min ha'teva, shem chom vayofes." No, I'm missing something there. And then it says, "V'cham." It says, "V'cham hu avichanan." Okay, shlosha elav, and Noach elav tach al aretz. And then it says, Noach planted the vines. He got drunk, and whatever happened happened. So now, so the Torah is not giving us the genealogies. It's only giving us three sons of Noach. Why does it say v'cham hu avichanan? So Rashbam says, because when you read the next story, before you get to the genealogies in the next parak, Noah, when he wakes up from his drunken stupor and realizes what Ham did him, the first words out of his mouth is Vayomer Aru Kanaan. He starts cursing Kanaan. So aside from the fact we don't know why he's cursing Kanaan, we don't even know who is Kanaan. So that's why the Torah provides us with a piece of information that we don't understand why we're being told, because it needs it for something later in the story. V'cham hu avichanan. So the Rashbam, without quoting that here, pulls a similar one here. Why does it say Vayishma Yisrael? He says, Lo nechtav ze el lodiacha shebishfil sheshama Yaakov esadavar amar lo b'shas tzava oso. Because Yaakov had heard about it, that's why when he gave his last will and testament, that's why he said, Pachas kamayim al tosar ki semishkevei avicha. Because otherwise you're going to be wondering about it. How did Yaakov know? Presumably he didn't do it in Yaakov's presence. Right? So the point is, Vayishma Yisrael. Yaakov heard about it. And now you understand. It registered with him. And then on his deathbed, he rebukes Reuven for it. Ibn Ezra here writes, Vayelech Reuven, Yafe Pirshu Rabu Seinuzal, V'chose Kolon Arum. Ibn Ezra, of course, never writes in a fashion that's direct. He likes to write in somewhat obscure terms. But what does he say here? So I wasn't sure what Ibn Ezra actually meant until I saw, and I don't know that it's correct, but I saw the Hadar Zakenim Ala Torah, who presents Ibn Ezra a particular light. But there are two possibilities. Let me tell you what he says literally. He says, Chazal interpreted well here, V'chose Kolon Arum, is a pasuk from Mishle, that one who covers up shame is wise. He's an Arum. He's a Chacham. So the question is, Yafe Pirshu Rabo Seinu, does that mean that that's correct what Chazal said? Or, more likely, does it mean is it was good that they explained the way they did? Not because that's Pshat, but because V'chose Kolon Arum. When you talk about certain things, you should not necessarily publicize everything. That's what probably Ibn Ezra means. So Ibn Ezra, not surprised, it is not a surprise, that Ibn Ezra should ignore the Medrash Chazal, that's a no-brainer. You would have been shocked if Ibn Ezra said otherwise. The Radak writes the following. He says, Eshes Aviv, if I were to ask you which way the Radak would come down, if you know anything about the Radak, would you say that he would read it literally, or would he read it like Chazal? What? Ira?
I felt like Chazal, but
I wouldn't have thought that way, because the Radak is a Pashtun. He quotes his share of Medrash, and he's not quite as dismissive, he's not dismissive of it the way Ibn Ezra might be. But let's see. The Radak says, Pilegesh Aviv, Eishes Aviv Haisa Nikwa Pilegesh. Sheruvein Chashav, Kilo Haisa Asura Olav, Lefisha Haisa Tchila Shivchasa, V'achar Kein Lekacha Aviv Lepilegesh. So, Reuven thought that maybe she wasn't really his father's wife, because she started out as a shifcha to Rachel, and then Yaakov took her as a pilegesh. V'akosav meir aleha shahaisa lo leisha. But the Torah actually says in last week's parsha that she really was a wife. Kemosha amar v'titein lo bilha shifchasa leisha v'haisa asura la, but she was prohibited to Reuven. They were commanded about not violating their rayas. Kosha came in Yaakov. Nefikach natal mimenu Yaakov b'choraso. Kemosha amar b'chalalo yitzu'ei aviv v'nitna b'choraso liyosef. The pasuk in Devarei Yamim. So Radak understands that Reuven did what it says literally. But the question is, why did Reuven do it? And that's what's interesting. So all the Radak says is that Reuven made a mistake. He thought it was permitted. Why? Because he thought that she was only a Pilegesh, she wasn't Eishes Aviv. But then you have to ask the question, okay, why did he do that though? It's a kind of strange thing. So I would suggest, Radak doesn't spell it out, but And let me frame it this way. Why did Yaakov take away the Bechorah from Reuven? So can anyone think of another biblical figure who wanted to marry a concubine of his father? He lost his head over it. So Adoniyah ben Chagis, who had wanted to be king, and then David eventually settled the succession controversy. So in Perek Beis, he goes and he makes a request from Bathsheba. So he wanted Avishag HaShunamis Leisha. And when Bathsheba goes to Shlomo and asks this, Shlomo erupts, and he basically has Adoniyah ben Chagis done away with. Why? Because it was an act of rebellion. Right? Why? Because it was an attempt to demonstrate that I am taking the Pilegish of my father. My father's wife I can't take. I'm going to take the Pilegish. Why? Because I'm the successor. And that would appear, according to the Radak, exactly what Reuven was doing. Why? He didn't think it was Aser. And why did he want to take his father's concubine? Because he wanted to show he was going to be king of the brothers. And as punishment for that, he erred. And as punishment for that, Yaakov took away his Bechorah. So that's the way the Radak treats it. Yes. Yeah, they already here.
So how would Reuven assume that this wasn't really his father's?
A pilegish? Can that you have, in Tanakh pilegishim have children?
But if you count it as part of 12, doesn't that kind of make you more?
I'm not sure. I don't think that the status of the children necessarily. Avram had children from Keturah, right? Who's described and presumably his title is a pilegish. He certainly had children with Pilagshim. Typically, what it would seem in Tanakh is that children of Pilagshim typically don't inherit. Right? So it sounds like Pilagshim's children don't have the same rights. Now you might say, of course, that the fact that they are counted ultimately in Eretz Yisrael, they get a Nachala, indicates that, in fact, as the Radak says, in actuality, they were children. Right? Even if you think about the Medrash about Yosef, Ayaveh Yosef esti basamer al avihem. So what are the three things Yosef told Yaakov? That they would be mevazeh the bnei shvachos. Why? It's serious, because they wanted to be the children. They didn't want to have more children in the mix. Okay. Now, the most interesting pashtun here to me is the Ramban, who's surprising on two levels. Ira, if I were to ask you, where do you think the Ramban would fall out on this? So what would you say? The Medrash or the Pshat? I would say Medrash too. I would say, especially since Ibn Ezra, if Ibn Ezra says what he says, Ramban is going to probably take him to task. The Ramban writes as follows. Vayishma Yisrael, Siper HaKosav An Mesanuso. The Ramban is bothered by why Vayishma Yisrael. He says, the Torah teaches us Yaakov's humility. Ki Shama Bechal Beno Yitzuav. He heard. But V'lo Tziva Sheyotzi Uhu Mechla Mibeso Mechla Bano V'lo Yinchal Imam. Yaakov didn't disinherit him. Avo Yimna Imana Imahem V'yu Shtei Masar. V'hu Yimana Rishon. Yaakov did not take vengeance in effect. Ulekach Asa Mishtei Aparshios Pasuk Echad. Ki Avo Pishu Tchila Le'inyet Tchilas Inyen Shebolim Nos Hashot Mishonot Dekulam Ramas Ki Ruvein Lonitcha B'masehu. Right. He incorporates here Rashi's pshat, by the way. Rashi is the pshat, but says nonetheless there's a hint that Reuven wasn't pushed out. V'alderech ha-pshat, yitochen shebilbel Reuven yitzue bila mipachto shelo teled liYaakov od. He didn't want Yaakov to have any more children. Which, by the way, is what the might be pshat, or the Medrash certainly says, why Chum did what he castrated his father. Because he didn't want Noach to have more children. Kihua Bechor, Reuven was the Bechor, Bechoshav Lakacha Shnei Chalakim, Beyasid Yosef Mikalachim. He assumed he would get a double portion, and he stood to lose more by additional children than any of the other brothers. Velo Pachan Me'imo, he wasn't worried about his mother, but by sleeping with Bilhah, the Ramban is assuming it basically Yaakov could no longer live with her. I'll talk about that in a moment also. So he says that Ulai said, V'lo pachar ma'imo, he wasn't worried about Yaakov having more children from Leah. Ki zekeina ha'isa, she was already too old. V'ulai mesa zilpa, perhaps Zilpa had died, and so that wasn't worried about her. O'choshash l'chvod imo, b'avor yosa shivcha. He did shivchasa. He didn't want to be sleep with Zilpa because it was his mother's shivcha. They've been too disrespectful to her. V'lachain, because he was motivated by increasing his portion, nitla mimena b'chora mida k'neged mida. Why does it tell us that Yaakov's children were 12? Because Yaakov would have no more children. Because the last wife who was young enough to have born children, Reuven had the file. This, by the way, brings to a story to mind a different story in Tana, where someone sleeps with the pilegesh of his father, so as to both demonstrate something and, in effect, it makes it clear his father will no longer sleep with them. And that was Avshalom. Right? One of the first acts that Ahithophel, who was very wise, told him to do to convince the people that there was no going back, that Avshalom wasn't going to make peace with David and they would get in trouble, was he said, "Bo al pilag she'avicha." And when David came back, he supported them, but that's the way the term Amanos Chayos comes from, I believe, from that passage. Because David wouldn't sleep with them anymore because Avshalom had defiled them. So that's how the Ramban understands what exactly Reuven did. But he understands it, not what I would expect at Ira either. He understands it. No, Reuven actually did what it says he did. He slept with his father's wife, and that rendered her, Yaakov, unable to sleep with her anymore. And since Leah was too old, and Zilpah was either dead or Reuven just wasn't going to go there, by defiling Bilhah, it meant Vayuv and Yaakov Shneimasar, there would be no more children. The last and somewhat bizarre interpretation, I really don't understand this at all, but it's fascinating, is quoted in Hadar Zakein Mala Torah. If you look to the part that I underlined, he says the following: V'yesh b'midrash shelokach Reuven loven beitza. He took egg whites, v'sam b'mitas Bilhah, and he put it on Bilhah's bed. U'chshara Yaakov kein, when Yaakov saw that, chashado sheshach abimah. Yaakov initially disowned him. Then Vayishma Yisrael. Then what did he hear? Ki sheker hadavar. Ki badak umatza shaloven beitzahay sevelo shechvasera. It was egg whites, not semen. Amar Yaakov, oz chilata yitzui ala shiratza lachalala. So the truth is, this too has a number of precedents in the Medrash. The most famous one is by Yosef and Eshes Potiphar. Right? In the Medrash, which is a magical and connecting all sorts of different things, wants to know why did Yosef favor the priests? He took away everybody's land, or they got to keep forfeits of the income, except for the Kohanim. Rak admas ha-kohanim lo-adam, lo-yisal ha-faro. Why? So the Medrash Chazal say, because Yosef, it was payback. It was the Komarim who had saved Yosef's life. Why? Because after the incident with Eshes Potiphar, she wanted to frame Yosef. So she took loaves and beitza, and she put it on the bed, and then she, you know, gave her accusations. And her husband didn't know whether to believe her or not, so he consulted with the Komarim. And they told him how to figure out, how to test. The Gemara says, you can test with fire, and each of the two substances reacts differently. And so he saw that, in fact, it was a frame, and Yosef didn't do anything. But he wasn't going to, so he didn't kill him, he just put him in jail. And because the Komarim saved Yosef's life, that's why he paid them back by not taxing their land for Paro. But that's the Agada that I think of. You have it a couple of places in the Bavli. Stories are told where someone tries to frame someone with this. So I don't really understand what exactly is going on here. Really, for the perhaps the most central piece, which is, why did Reuven do it in the first place? I mean, the only answer I could give, but it would have backfired, is that he wanted his father to think that he had slept with Bilhah so that he wouldn't sleep with her anymore and he wouldn't have any more children. But it's a very, very, very odd medrash. But anyway, so this is really, the Rishonim have really are split on this issue, perhaps not surprisingly. But for the Chazal understand that Reuven actually only was Tovea al ben Imo. He didn't actually sleep with his father's wife. A number of the Parshanim, a number of the Tanaim thought that he did, but the motivations seem to be, the way I understand, one of two purposes. Either, if I understand the Radak correctly, it was to demonstrate that he was the Bechor because he thought what he was doing was permissible. That was his father's Pilegesh, not his father's wife. And the second approach out of the Ramban is that Reuven slept with his father's wife or Pilegesh, whatever it was, deliberately to aser her on his father so that his father would have no more children. And as punishment, Mida Keneged Mida, Yaakov took away his Bechor. So anyway, that is the story of Kala Omer Reuven Chata Eino Elatoa. Oh,